I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Happy summer, everyone. It is officially summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's a perfect time to set off and go exploring, whether that's a far destination or something right in your own backyard. Today, we're going to trek through the eastern townships of Quebec, sampling all kinds of things as we go. And to start us off, we're going to talk with someone whose books are almost ambassadors to the region themselves. Louise Penny is the author of the best-selling Inspector Gamache mystery novels set in the small fictional village of Three Pines in the eastern townships. Hello again, Louise. Nice to talk with you.
Hey, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Happy summer, and thanks for joining us.
First day, and what a day.
I know. So set the stage for us, then. What is there to love about the eastern townships?
I suspect it is different from Vermont in that it's, as you know, it's very French because it's Quebec. I have people who, in fact, even my publishers, who you would think know the books, and they come up here and they're shocked by, as soon as you cross the border, and it's normally the Richford crossing that people use, it is genuinely French. It's not like, you know, a little bit of French, but mostly English. It is completely French. And I think that makes it, gives it a certain tone and feeling that you don't get anywhere else in North America. But it's, you know, the light is beautiful, the rolling hills, the forests, the nature, the connection people have to the land. I know I'm not saying anything that really isn't all that unusual for Vermont, for that matter.
You know, you mentioned
the cuisine is different, of course.
Well, and I'm going to ask you about that because, of course, anybody who's going anywhere, you need to eat, so you might as well eat something good. But before we get to that, we got a note and a question for you from one of our pals on Reddit. Type4RandomWords is the handle they go by, and suggesting visiting Knowlton, and says many elements of Louise Penny's books are based in the area. There's some small shops, cafes, and a historical museum worth visiting, especially for fans of the books. My wife has been reading them for years. After we spent a day in Knowlton last summer, I got interested. Now I'm halfway through the series. And this person has a question for you, saying, as an English speaker, how does that affect your life in the eastern townships? Are there activities, events, or relationships that you feel like you're missing out on?
I don't. That is an excellent question, though, and it goes to what I was saying before about it being very French. I know it's possible to live here as a unilingual English person. A bit of a shame if you do, because I think you are then missing out on some things. But it is certainly possible to live a rich and full life here. Most of the committees that I've belonged to or boards that I've sat on are bilingual. So, no, you really don't if all you do is speak English. Again, it would be a shame not to at least try to speak some French, but I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything by being an Anglophone.
You write so beautifully about this region, and the fictional town of Three Pines, the touchstone for so many of your books, is a place that so many of your readers actually want to live, despite how many murders seem connected to the place. And sadly, they can't, but they can sort of cobble together their own Three Pines in the eastern townships. And I hope maybe you can take us on a little bit of a tour and start us off at Lac Brome Books and give us a sense of where we might find our own Three Pines.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the Brome Lake books because actually they've moved from, if people are who are listening right now have been up, they've moved to another location right on Main Street, which is fantastic. And it was one of the inspirations, obviously, for Myrna's bookstore in the books. If you go in, it's not exactly the same, but you still get that wonderful independent bookstore feel. And it's run by Danny and Lucy, who are passionate and very involved in the community. This is Knowlton, is also known as Brome Lake, is larger than Three Pines, but it has the same sense. And you're right, the books are love letters in many ways to the people I know and care about, but also to where I live. I could live anywhere in the world, and I choose to live here and reflect it in the books. And Brome Lake Books was one of them here in Knowlton. There's a place not too far away in a community called Sutton, which has a wonderful ski hill, And there's a bakery there called La Rumeur Affamée. And that's, oh my God, it's amazing. Cheeses from all over the place, and particularly from Quebec and some from Vermont, and baked goods and breads and pastries. And oh my God, it's just fantastic. Then I would suggest if people are coming up that they try to visit, there's a little chapel, St. Aidan's, which is the inspiration for the church in Three Pines. And that's in a little village called Sutton Junction. There's the monastery as well that is a real, I think not many people really know about this monastery unless they read the books. It's called Saint-Benoît-du-Lac. It's on Lake Memphremagog, which, as you know, also goes into Vermont, a little bit of it.
And has its own monster.
Yes, Memphrey.
Yes.
Exactly. But there's this wonderful Benedictine monastery on the lake, Saint-Benoît, and that was the setting for one of the books, I think it's the eighth book called The Beautiful Mystery. And they make wonderful cheese there. Never mind, you know, you can talk to God and then go down and get some cheese.
Which may be the same thing for some people.
Exactly.
But what about if you really, really want to eat in the bistro and you can't be in Three Pines? You know, where might somebody get a really good hearty meal?
There are all sorts of places around. The bistro, although it's really the heart of Three Pines in many ways, is where the people come and congregate, and a lot happens in the books in the bistro, not just eating, but other things. And I wanted to get that sense of the meal as community. The bistro almost uniquely is not based on any one place, or even any place that even remotely resembles it. So I couldn't say, well, you go here and you get the sense, or go there and get the sense. But all sorts of smaller places in and around Knowlton, you would get that, at least some sense of the feeling and the French and the cuisine. One place I would also suggest where they do have just fantastic food is Manoir Hovey, which is on Lake Massawippi. And it's the setting for the fourth book called A Rule Against Murder. It's set at a Manoir Hovey-esque location. And they have a wonderful dining room.
So, you know, Louise, I'm wondering what draws you and keeps you in the Eastern Townships and what you still want to explore, what you're still discovering about the region?
Well, there are a lot of little, like small areas, little rivers and places to go swimming, you know, what's being called wild swimming, that I don't know about, that people talk about. I'd love to do more kayaking. That would be really amazing. But there's just a whole bunch of things that I don't really know. I am not by nature a very adventurous person in most senses. I think I'm emotionally adventurous, but not so physically. So I tend to pretty much go to the places I know and then come back home. And so I really need someone to take me by the hand and say, let me show you this place.
Yeah, I'm sure you get a lot of people raising their hand to do that right now.
That's right. But, you know, that's a great question about why I'm here. As I said, I could live anywhere in the world. I choose to live here, and it's something ineffable. It's just I've been looking, feeling a hole that I was missing home. And as soon as I came here, Michael and I moved down here, I knew that this was home, and it is. I travel all over the world, but boy, when I come through this door, I know that I'm home. And it's something that I could not describe, but it feels as though they have been saving the place at the table for me for decades, and I just finally showed up and took that place, and it feels like home. It is home.
Well, Louise Penny, I appreciate you sharing that sense of your home with us and helping to get us started and inspired in thinking about the Eastern Townships today. Thank you very much for being on the program.
I love that you're doing this. Thank you.
That's Louise Penny. She's the author of the best-selling Inspector Gamache mystery novels. We have interviewed her several times, including up in Knowlton at Brome Lake Books, and we'll link to that interview. We're talking about the Eastern Townships, some great things to do and see and eat and drink. Louise mentioned wanting to kayak more and that a sense of physical adventure. We got some people sharing ideas for how to have an outdoor adventure. Redditor Not a Dana Fan writes, Parc National du Mont Orford is a great place to go camping. I've done weekend trips as far as Charlevoix and Gaspésie. I'm always surprised people don't take better advantage of Quebec as a vacation destination because there's a ton of stuff to see. And Helibot recommends Owl's Bread Boulangerie and says, cycling, cycling, cycling. And L'Antidote Food Lab in Sherbrooke. It's amazing. We're also getting other ideas for ways to travel around in the eastern townships. Redditor SZBlah 1964 says, how about take a road trip along the border? The Richford Slide Road to the east of East Richford, Vermont, briefly crosses into Quebec, and then the border goes through a cemetery. The road crosses into Canada due to topography. There's some houses on the north side with the front yard in Vermont and the house or backyard in Quebec. Patricia Fartish is the supervisor of tours at Bleu Levant, a lavender farm and distillery in Stanstead, just a 6-mile drive from the Vermont border. And she's on the line with us now. Hello, Patricia.
Hi.
Nice to talk with you. And I'm curious, trying to imagine on the radio here where we don't have smell-o-vision, what it might smell like at your farm as you walk among the lavender in, say, August. I mean, I always think of having to rub the lavender to really get the smell out. So does it smell good or just look beautiful when all the plants are in bloom?
Actually, both. It looks beautiful and it does smell, I would say, by touch, by caressing the plants, which is one of the things as a guide and giving tours to visitors that we do show how to do just by caressing the stems, because we must remember that off the plant, off the bush of lavender, the plant contains a lot of essential lavender oil. So just by caressing alongside the stem and the actual flowers at the tip, you will, just by smelling your hands, definitely recognize the scent of lavender oil.
And you actually let people caress the plant, as you say. You don't mind if people come visit and do that.
It's our pleasure to get people involved. We like the interaction. We like to, we have a distillery to show. We have tales to tell this year. And we do bring, we accompany the visitors into the fields. And that's where we talk about different varieties that we have, how we take care of them, how long they stay in our fields, because there is a field rotation that we call every 10 years. So we are open since 2004. As a matter of fact, we did a field rotation last year, because at one point when it reaches a maturity of 10 years, we must understand that the shrubs are not as productive in giving us or providing us with essential oil. So what we need to do is remove those plants from the fields and simply replace them by younger generation.
Hmm. You grow 3 types of lavender on your farm?
Yes, we do. We have the true lavender, which is the Mondstadt, which is the most popular lavender. And we have the lavandine, and we have Afghan lavender.
I have always thought that lavender was a little bit tricky to grow in this climate. I haven't had much luck overwintering it. How are you doing?
Well, here at the farm, we have to, when we get ready at the end of the season for winter months, we need to put some straw on our plants. And on top of the straw, we put a thart. And that is hankered down in the soil. So for winter months, because of that tharp, the wind won't get to blow around the snow. Since it is quite wide here at the farm, at the very beginning, we would not apply any tharps. We'd only put the straw. But the straw would be moving around. So that's what we do. And in the spring, we roll up the tharp, and then we just vacuum the straw, and we see green foliage day by day coming up. And right now, we're close to the end of June, and stems are growing off more of the Mondstadt right now. So the season looks very good for the bloom mid-July till beginning of August for the Mondstadt.
I can't wait to see it. It sounds wonderful.
It's
and you
beautiful.
You mentioned that there's sort of some storytelling, and there's sort of like a, I don't know, a little bit of mythology going on your farm. When people get the tours, it's not just the life cycle of the lavender plant.
Right. Last year, we did have guided tours. This year, we have a new approach to present to visitors. We will have two main stations, the distillery, and someone in the garden area to tell a tale, a story. In the distillery, there's a character, comedian. His name is Rondou. And in the garden center, we have Miss Augustifolia, which is her grandmother, was Augustine, and she will be telling both of them tales. So the way it will be presented to the public when they arrive on site, we will welcome them, give them the information, where they can go to find the distillery, the garden center, the bistro to have a quick bite to eat. We have a massage area, and they can roam the grounds freely as they wish. But in the distillery, when we greet the visitors in the morning and during, during the day, for English and French visitors, we will have groups of visitors separated for English speaking. They will be able to go either in the distillery or the garden center, and this will be done at the same time. So French can go into the distillery, for example, and if we have English speaking, they can go on to the garden center. This will be done by 30-minute increments. So after they're done with the garden center, our English visitors can go back to the distillery and pick up on the tale of Rondou in the distillery.
So there's something for everyone, and I appreciate hearing it, and I'm imagining the smell in my head. Patricia Fartish is the supervisor of tours at Bleu Levant. It's a lavender farm and distillery in Stansted, one of a couple of lavender farms. Patricia, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Joanne in Franklin says, shout out to La Fruiterie Champetre in Stanbridge East. It's a pick-your-own strawberry and raspberry farm. It's beautiful and right along the wine route. The owners and staff are lovely and welcoming. It's easy picking and a great addition to a trip to the area. Sharon in Meriden, New Hampshire says, I live in New Hampshire but grew up in the townships in the tiny village of Mose River. The area between Newport and Sherbrooke is home to me. If you cross the border at Derby, you'll travel up the Stansted Highway towards Sherbrooke with miles of open fields, farms, and views of the lakes. She also recommends a visit to Quatticook for a walking tour and crossing the fabulous suspension bridge over the Quatticook Gorge. Then visit the dairy for ice cream. Don't worry if you don't speak French, she says. In this part of the townships, you'll find a large pocket of English Quebecers. It's not uncommon when Anglophones and Francophones meet to hear them speaking a curious blend of both. And let's go back and see if we can get Bruce in Cambridge, New York. Hi, Bruce. You there?
Hi there. So I just wanted to recommend a region which is less visited. Usually when people visit the eastern townships, they sort of pay attention to the southern tier, so to speak, mostly west of Lake Mefremagog. But the area north and east of Sherbrooke, it really turns into a different kind of terrain. It's farming country. You get very different sort of large-scale vistas, and that's actually my favorite part of the eastern townships. So I recommend that highly.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks for that recommendation, Bruce, and nice to hear from you. Sylvie says, when I travel to the eastern townships, I love the fact that I can listen to VPR in my car radio there. My insider tip is a lovely family restaurant called Au Deux Clochers, or the Two Steeples. It's in the quaint village of Freiligsburg, and at the back of the restaurant, there's a small balcony overlooking the Pike River. It's a lovely spot for a midsummer lunch. Try the club sandwich. All right, let's go to another guest here. Stanley Lake is an artist, potter, jazz musician, and founding member of Le Tour des Arts. He's based in Mansonville, about 7 miles across the border from North Troy, Vermont. Stanley, nice to talk with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the program.
How did you make your way to the Eastern Townships?
Well, I was originally born in Cleveland, Ohio. And in 1974, just immigrated to Quebec, had a connection with a family member up here, or a friend of the family, and eventually found this old farmstead where we bought it like 4 days after we saw the farm and established our pottery here in 1975.
And how did you become one of the founding members of this tour, this arts tour that goes through the region?
I think for quite a while of my life, I've been promoting musicians in university. I was doing that, and then getting up here and establishing myself as an individual potter. I just came to the realization that as a group of people, we could be very successful in promoting both our work and the area. So that was the idea of the Tour des Arts. And I should spell that. It's T-O-U-R-D-E-S-A-R-T-S, but we pronounce it Tour des Arts. So it was an idea to promote, and what we're doing now everywhere is promote local. So back then, about 30 years ago, trying to promote the local artists, artisans, performing artists. And one other aspect that has always been important to me, I was a former teacher and professor, was to educate whenever I have the opportunity and inspire. So one of the main purposes of the Tour des Arts is to have, well, we give demonstrations in the studios, but to hopefully have some younger people, younger children, come in, and they might have already an artistic bent, and to have them inspired by both by the creative space and watching the creative process, watching the technical process. So, and just to give them permission to, you know, oh, I want to do this someday, and inspire them.
So give us a little bit of the tour. Give us some of the highlights. Now, I know it's always hard to highlight one or two things, but there's performance art, there's music, there's dramatic novel readings, there's all kinds of two-dimensional art as well and three-dimensional.
Yeah, well, there's this year, typically there's between 35 and 40 studios to visit. This year there are 35. So our brochure or our website has a map and has pictures of the different artists and brief descriptions. So this year we feature jewelers and weavers, potters, painters of many, many different styles, woodworkers and metalwork, quilters, photography, glass, sculptors. So something there for everybody's taste. And virtually, basically what you do is go on the website or you have the brochure and you can create your own mini tour within the Tour des Arts. And in the evening, which is really fun for me as I'm a performer also, we promote the performing artists in the areas, writers, theater, dance, music, jazz. So the person coming to the area not only will be visiting the studios during the day, but they can eat in the restaurants, which we recommend in our brochure, and in the evening also experience some of the talent of the performing artists. And also, we list different places to stay overnight. One of the things about the tour is not to rush through it, to actually try to do maybe 8 studios a day. So it could be a 2-day experience for you. And one of the other beauties that I see, and what Louise has spoken about in the program earlier, was that gets you off the main road into the back hills. You get to see people's gardens, their houses, their studios. So it's a great adventure to get more deeper into an area than you normally would.
You know, when it comes to tours and summer festivals, I understand you're also a jazz musician and you play in the fall Sutton Jazz Festival. So if people really want to stretch this idea of a summer vacation into fall, they could be sure to hang around for that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're into our 17th or 18th year of what's called as Sutton Jazz. It's in the town of Sutton. And it's on 4 weekends in September, starting September 15th, going to October 6th. And it features, there's 28 performances. 4 of them are paid and the rest are free. Some on the ski hill at Mount Sutton and others in the restaurants. So it's a pretty vibrant scene. Features lots of local jazz musicians, but the paid events also feature the Musicians Great, which is a great resource, Montreal. Wonderful musicians that we bring down and expose to the community. And again, we go into the schools and we do some programs there. So again, carrying that educational aspect of what I'm trying to do, inspiring younger people too to pursue some of these alternative jobs opportunities.
Well, Stanley, thank you very much for telling us a little bit about your life and about what you love and about the arts in your region. Thanks.
Okay, I appreciate the opportunity and thank you. Bye-bye.
Stanley Lake is an artist, a potter, a jazz musician, and he's a founding member of Le Tour des Arts. He's based in Mansonville. And before we leave this wonderful place, we're going to hear some more from other people who are sharing their thoughts on best places to go, to see, to eat, to adventure. Type 4 random words on Reddit suggests trying your hand at curling. It says there are active curling clubs in several towns in the area. Many Americans are members. My wife and I rent a club for the day once a year for about 30 friends and coworkers. The biggest challenge is getting everyone who wants to play across the border. Usually a rental. It comes with all the equipment. Sometimes you can get an instructor. And it also includes a bar, bartender, and a community kitchen so we can host a potluck. It's a pretty fun way to spend a cold day with friends. Another Redditor, Running Stitch, says politics is sort of motivating more Canada trips and writes, "The spate of tariffs and the tone our government is taking towards Canada baffles me. From my layperson perspective, it seems to have less to do with a coherent policy and more to do with mean-spiritedness. When your country starts behaving in a way you can't understand or support, what do you do? If I see someone being bullied, what do? I try to stand with them in any small way I can and let them know they're supported. Does crossing the border to go out for dinner change much or fix anything? Probably not, but it is a small thing. Maybe it just makes me feel like I'm doing something." And Steve in Putney says, "In the early 1970s, I had the fortune to drive across Canada from Newfoundland to Vancouver Island. When traveling through the townships, I remember the road meandered from one small village to another, passing many farmhouses with tables out by the road with blueberries and fresh bread for sale, often with outdoor wood-fired ovens still smoking next to the house. I want to go back and still see if it's still as I fondly remember it." Let's turn now to Richard Brizy, the owner and head winemaker at Vignoble du Mont Brizy. His vineyard is also part of the Brome-Missisquoi wine route. His vineyard is in Sutton. It's about 12 miles north of the Vermont town of Richford. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be on air with you.
Well, it's lovely to have you and lovely to learn more about what you do and what so many people in the region do. Is the wine scene strong in the eastern townships?
It's actually gaining a lot of momentum. We got a great community out here. We have 22 wineries up here on the wine route. So, I mean, we're gaining strength. We got a lot of visitors. Every year we get more and more visitors. So it's actually a wonderful business to be in.
I understand you didn't actually start off in the business trying to make wine. How did you get started?
Oh, boy. Long story, but in 97, I decided to maybe plant vines, and then I was consulted to not do it here in Sutton. It wasn't really the place to do it, supposedly, so I guess I let it go, and then 4 years later, I just decided to, hey, if I can see other people do something in life, I can do it too. So believe it or not, I went ahead and planted 12,500 vines with no consultant.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it seems to have paid off, given that you just won an All-Canadian Wine Championship silver medal for a red wine. Isn't making red wine in Quebec even harder than making white wine in Quebec?
Totally. And the 12,500 vines that I planted red. So red grapes. So the challenge was on. And, you know, I come from a farm. I was raised on a farm my whole life. And I always liked the agricultural, and I like a challenge. So I basically started up with no knowledge and started following courses and talking to other wineries and feeling it out, see what I got to do. And, you know, and my whole goal was actually when I planted these 12,500 vines, it was totally just to sell grapes to other wineries. I never actually drank a bottle of wine in my life. And I was just on that concept. And 4 years go by, then I realized that it was way too much work and beautiful fruit. Why don't I decide to make something out of it?
Okay, well, sure. So there you are making wine, and now you make it. What do you produce?
We produce, actually, many products. We have a white, a rosé, two red wines, a late harvest, and a kind of like a fortified wine, a 16%.
We have a note from another Redditor who wants to recommend another winery. Domaine de Côte d'Arvoise is the oldest vineyard in the province and has a whole sculpture garden scattered throughout, features artists local to the area, and great wine. And Richard, you mentioned that this wine route, the Brome-Missisquoi wine route, has 22 vineyards, and it has itineraries for people who want to do it by car or by bike. What kinds of places will they pass through?
Well, you get to see all kinds of little villages, you know. Like, I mean, there's many villages along the wine route. There's, you got areas where there's more concentration of wineries. We are a little bit outside the global area, but, it's such a beautiful scenery. I mean, you can bike along for anywhere from, if you're willing to go from 5K to 50K, I mean, you can visit many, many wineries. And, I mean, it's a beautiful scenery. And, I mean, the best part about it, I mean, we invite people here up at the winery to chill out and, I mean, kind of make them feel at home. We actually let them go in the vines, have picnics. We got over 30 picnic tables set up. So if anybody wants to just stop in, have a picnic lunch. They're totally welcome. We got two ponds on site here with the vines, and we even now actually have some hammocks. So we got little zones out there where people can come chill in the hammocks and have a glass of wine.
That sounds wonderful. And anything else that you love to do in the Eastern Townships at this time of year beyond drink your wine?
You know what? I heard Louise Penny mention something before about kayaking on the radio. And as funny as it was, I lived here for 43 years my whole life, and I never did it. And I actually did it last Sunday.
Really? That was your first kayak trip?
My first kayak trip, and it won't be my last. It was the best afternoon, Sunday afternoon I've had in a long time. Beautiful scenery. We did a 12-kilometer kayaking. I mean, there's so much to discover. You got to have, look, it took me 43 years to discover that we actually have a beautiful river to kayak on.
Well, that's a wonderful place to end it. Richard, I thank you for sharing your wine story and your kayaking story with us. Nice to talk with you.
I thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Richard Brzee is the owner and head winemaker at Vignoble du Mont Brzee. His vineyard is also part of the Brome-Missisquoi wine route, and his vineyard is in Sutton. We got a note from Rue who says, "We spend glorious time in Lac Megantic every year. The butter from the local dairies is fantastic, and we bring back enough for us to last until the next visit. It also makes for much anticipated gifts for friends. We love hearing all that you love about the Eastern Townships. You can keep it coming on our Facebook page or at vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition.